This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. We are 177 days away from the start of the college football season. I know you might be listening to this a couple weeks from now and things have changed, but on Thursday, March 5th, 177 days away, week zero, we added a game. We added San Jose State at USC. USC really beefing up that non-conference schedule, I see. North Carolina, TCU, that'll be in Ireland. Hawaii, Stanford in the Bay. NC State, Virginia in Rio, Brazil. New Mexico State, Florida State, Memphis, and UNLV. Of course, in college football, we had the news come out on Wednesday night of the passing of Lou Holtz, head coach at NC State, Arkansas, Minnesota, Notre Dame, South Carolina, college football final with Mark May over the years. Very notable personality and legendary coach, at least for the team that I cheer for, Notre Dame. So he is the last coach to lead the Irish to a national championship. So I'm going to bring on Pete Sampson to give us a bit of an in-depth preview of the Irish. And I will say this. I know you're already collectively rolling your eyes, and if you have the Notre Dame drinking game, you can already hit your cocktail. But if there are teams that you would like to hear me go in depth on, just hit me up, cfbpod@vsin.com. And I would love to do a little in-depth breakdown of some of these teams. I'm sure I'll go in-depth on Texas and Ohio State and Oregon, Indiana, teams like that. But if there's a team that you'd like me to hear, bring on a beat reporter, whatever, let's do it. We got a lot of time from now until the start of the season. As you heard, 177 days until the start of the college football season. But Notre Dame right now, if you look at DraftKings, is one of four teams at 7-1. If you look at FanDuel, they're the betting favorite at plus 650. Circa, they're around 8-1. So they're going to be up there in the preseason prognostications heading into 2026. So we will do that in just a little bit. But I also was thinking about this, and you know, we've seen a couple lists start to make their way around social media, whatever it may be. And Ari Wasserman, who's actually going to join the show next week from On Three, we're a big fan of Ari and Andy Staples. They do a great podcast. We've had Ari on the show before, actually a couple of times, and he made a list of his top 10 returning quarterbacks. And granted, it was before the news came out that Trinidad Chambliss was returning. And then we get Bill Conley, who puts his list out on Thursday from ESPN, someone we've also had on the show before, and he's got a list of returning quarterbacks. And the reason it kind of sparked something for me is I think back to last year, and you just look at the preseason odds to win the national title last year, right before the start of the season. Texas was the betting favorite at plus 450. They had an unknown at quarterback with Arch Manning. We had high expectations for Arch Manning, but still an unknown. Ohio State, they had an unknown at quarterback. They were at plus 525. They were going to break in a new quarterback in Julian Sain. Georgia had Gunnar Stockton, but we had seen a little bit of Gunnar Stockton, right? He was thrust into duty in the SEC championship game when Carson Beck got hurt. He started the Sugar Bowl, and that was it. But they didn't go to the portal. They stuck with Gunnar Stockton. Penn State, we knew what they had in Drew Aller. And then Oregon. And they were going to Dante Moore. You look at those five teams, and they all had their quarterbacks, or excuse me, four of those five teams had their starting quarterback from the previous season depart. And this year, I really think it is a fascinating discussion, whether you're looking at Heisman futures or just futures from a team standpoint. The teams this year in college football are pretty stacked at the quarterback position. And you can just look at the consensus top 20 of teams that are out there in 2026. So if you just kind of aggregate all of the way too early top 25s, and this is in no real particular order, but all of these teams don't really have questions at quarterback, right? So let's run through it real quickly. Ohio State, Julian Sain is back. Texas, Arch Manning is back. Oregon, Dante Moore is back. Indiana, they lose Fernando Mendoza. oh shoot. But they go out and get Hoover from TCU. That's a pretty big, I want to say upgrade. Didn't know, I almost said upgrade. It's not an upgrade, but it is a pretty darn good quarterback who actually was more productive at his previous stop than the guy who ended up winning the Heisman Trophy. Now, was it a perfect marriage of Fernando Mendoza going to Indiana and everything around him? Yeah, it was incredible. But you go out and get Hoover from TCU, that's a pretty nice landing spot after losing the Heisman Trophy winner and presumed number one overall pick. Notre Dame, C.J. Carr, full coming into this year. You look at Bill Conley, had C.J. Carr number one. Georgia, got Gunnar Stockton coming back. Miami, you lose Carson Beck, you get Darian Mensah from Duke. Texas A&M, whether you like him or not, Marcel Reed back at Texas A&M. Texas Tech, definitely an upgraded quarterback. They went out and they brought in Sorsby from Cincinnati. Oklahoma, you know, I felt like I got some grief last year talking about Oklahoma because as much as I like John Mateer at Washington State, I said, are we so sure that John Mateer is going to be this Heisman Trophy level quarterback? Now, it feels like Oklahoma and John Mateer, people are kind of like pushing them to the side because he didn't play great in the postseason. Well, he's now going to be healthy. And this was a guy that at one point after the Michigan game was like 9-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. So John Mateer, he's back. You look at LSU, they went out and got Sam Leavitt. Could argue that was an upgrade from Garrett Nussmeier. Now, I'm just argue. I'm not saying it definitely is, but Sam Leavitt, he's a quarterback that's led a team to the playoff before, has a playoff, overtime loss to Texas, right? So pretty darn good. Michigan, Bryce Underwood. Maybe jury's still out, but his second year as a full-time starter. Alabama, that's the biggest concern of these teams that I've mentioned so far. They don't really have an answer yet, whether it be the kid Austin or, you know, they've got some question marks at the quarterback position. So Alabama, certainly a question. Ole Miss, Trinidad Chambliss, we know what he's capable of. BYU, Bear Bachmeyer. Think about last year in July. BYU loses their starting quarterback. He goes to Tulane. He gets kicked off the team. They go to a true freshman in Bear Bachmeyer. He's now in year two as the starter. USC, Jaden Maiava, back for another year. Louisville, question marks, I would say. It's fair to ask. Lincoln Keenholz, he was a guy that some people thought was legitimately in the discussion for the Ohio State job. Very athletic quarterback, but I think that's fair to say, unknown there. Penn State, Rocco Becht. Like him or not, the dude started a million college football games over his college football career. Missouri, they go to the transfer portal. They get Austin Simmons. Austin Simmons started last year at Ole Miss. He gets hurt. Trinidad Chambliss comes in, and the rest is history. So you could ask yourself, hey, there's some questions there. But still, he was a quarterback that we've seen at moments. He took over when Jackson Dart got hurt in a Georgia game and was very competent at the quarterback position. Washington, I love Damon Williams. It was a bizarre situation during this offseason. You also have to ask yourself when you lose Denzel Boston and Jonah Coleman in the backfield, how much, Denzel Boston, wide receiver, Jonah Coleman, running back, how much is that going to hurt his production? But still, you've got Damon Williams coming back for another year. South Carolina, Lenore Sellers. He had all this hype going into this season. Didn't really live up to it, but he's back for another year. And then a team like Utah, Kyle Whittingham leaves, the offensive coordinator leaves, but Devin Dampier back for another season. So I say all that to say this, looking at the Heisman market, and it's super early, and I'm not saying I've fired on any of these, but you're going to get some quarterbacks that are relatively household names at some pretty juicy prices. So you think back to last year, Fernando Mendoza was 80-1 to win the Heisman Trophy in the offseason at Circa. And I'm sure at various other spots too, but I know Jeff Benson tweeted out that he was 80-1. That's pretty nice value to have, right? You look back in 2024, Travis Hunter was 50-1. In 2023, Jaden Daniels' preseason was 10-1. They lose their season opener to Florida State. He goes to 40-1, so there were opportunities to be had. In 2022, Caleb Williams, 6-1. Bryce Young in 2021 was 8-1. And Devontae Smith in 2020 was 100-1. I think this year, now, could ultimately Arch Manning win the Heisman Trophy? Yeah, it's certainly possible. Arch Manning, you know, they put a ton of money into skill position players. They went out, got Cam Coleman to add to what should be already a pretty loaded offense there at Texas. But look up and down the odds board this year. Just go and do a little bit of just casual looking, and you're going to see some names, and you're going to be like, wow, I can get that quarterback at that price. Even John Mateer, I'm looking at FanDuel right now, is 35-1. Last year, he was, 25-1, 20-1? He was all the rage. People were talking about him as a Heisman Trophy winner, and now you can get him at 35-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. You keep going down that list. You look at Drew Mestemaker, not saying that he's going to win the Heisman Trophy at Oklahoma State, but think about the numbers he put up at North Texas, and now he goes to Oklahoma State, sitting there at 80-1. JKS, our guy, Jaron Kiave Sangapulateli, back for another year at Cal. You look up and down, and I really believe this is the year of the quarterback in college football. I mean, hell, Avery Johnson, 2 years ago at Big 12 Media Day, he was the talk of the town, right? Kansas State said, Will Howard, you can go. We like this guy, Avery Johnson. And now things have gone a bit awry. You've got Colin Klein coming into his alma mater to be the starting, to be the head coach. Avery Johnson, dual threat quarterback, 80-1. Kevin Jennings at SMU. Yep, he's still there, 100-1. Nico, I mean, once upon a time, this podcast host had a bet on Nico Iamaleava to win the Heisman Trophy at 15-1 heading into a season at Tennessee, and now he's 100-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. But even just if you're just a football fan and you're looking up and down this board and the names that you see and where they were the year before and are they back, you look at Noah Fifita back at Arizona, CJ Bailey back at NC State. It is really exciting to look at some of these players and where they are heading into this college football season. Hell, you look at a guy who was in the playoff a year ago. I'm not saying he's going to win the Heisman Trophy, but Alonzo Barnett at James Madison, he's transferred to UCF. He's going to be in our life now at a Power Four program. It is really exciting to look at the college football quarterbacks. And you go read that article that Bill Conley put out earlier today of the best quarterbacks returning. And I'm not just saying this because he made it, you know, CJ Carr is number one, but you go down that list and you go look at, you know, number 19, returning quarterback, John Mateer, number 20, Damon Williams, number 21, Avery Johnson, number 22, JKS, number 23, Kevin Jennings. I mean, Kevin Jennings is a playoff quarterback. And you could say, well, SMU got in because of an easy schedule 2 years ago. Regardless, the 23rd best returning quarterback in the P4 is Kevin Jennings at SMU, a guy who's been there for a couple of years now since taking over for Preston Stone. And then you could sprinkle in a guy like Colton Joseph, who transfers in from Old Dominion, or a Byron Brown, who transfers to Auburn from USF. I mean, college football in 2026 is going to be absolutely stacked with quarterbacks. And you throw in Nebraska, bringing in a guy like Anthony Calandria, who had a phenomenal season at UNLV. Bo Prabula, he's at Virginia now. So I just look up and down, and it gets me excited when I look at who's out there. And, you know, we'll do a deeper dive, certainly, as the season goes on or the offseason goes on, and what quarterbacks we should look at to take flyers to win the Heisman Trophy. Because about, I think it was two summers ago, I did an episode here where I said, don't bet Heisman Trophy futures in the summer. Now, I think you could really make the case. Now, you got to try to find the right horse. Like last year, I took a flyer on Devin Dampier, took a flyer on Damon Williams. Obviously, neither one of those panned out. I could bet them again. They're both back at the same institution that they were at a year ago. So I think there's a lot of potential opportunities out there. Could it go chalk? Could CJ Carr or Arch Manning or Julian Sayin win the Heisman Trophy? Sure. They're going to have high profile games. Could Hoover at Indiana make it back to back? The talent that's on Indiana's roster? Yeah, it certainly is possible. But I think looking at the landscape this year with all of the high level quarterbacks, it does feel like there's going to be a chance, whether it's in the preseason or at some point during the regular season, for us to grab a pretty juicy price on a quarterback, because they can't all be 10-1, right? You look at up and down the board and the names that I was mentioning and where they're at, there's just going to be an opportunity to find some long shots. And hopefully one of them comes home when the name is announced in New York City. But man, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch college football this year when you think about where some of these players are at in 2026 or how long they've been there. You know, we talk so much about quarterbacks or just player movement, especially now we're in March, college basketball. There wasn't a ton of player movement at the quarterback position. Now, there was some. Obviously, Duke fans would say, I disagree. We lost our quarterback, and now we're dealing with Walker Egitt at quarterback, the transfer from San Jose State. But for the most part, a guy like Mason Heinschel, who came onto the scene middle of the season for Nard Dope at Pittsburgh, but he's coming back for another season. So, man, when we flip on our screens in 177 days to start the college football season, we're going to see some pretty good quarterback play this year, and very much looking forward to it. And maybe CJ Carr could live up to the hype. We'll see if that is the way this ultimately pans out. He is the betting favorite at a number of places to win the Heisman Trophy. I think a lot of that has to do with the helmet that he wears, but also the fact that Notre Dame's schedule is pretty easy. Will Notre Dame be right there for a national championship in 2026, the first time since they had Lou Holtz roaming the sidelines? We'll talk to Pete Sampson of The Athletic next. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, and as mentioned, always looking forward to and always any reason to bring on my good friend Pete Sampson, who covers Notre Dame for The Athletic, his podcast, The Independent, he and Matt Fortuna. Of course, the news that took the sports world yesterday, the passing of Lou Holtz, gave us not only reason to talk maybe about the Lou Holtz meaning at Notre Dame, but also just this program. It's funny, Pete, I opened up the podcast going through what could be the year of the quarterback in college football. I mean, the list is endless of returning starters and just high quality arms all across. And then you see an article that comes out on Thursday morning from Bill Conley of ESPN, and he's got CJ Carr, Notre Dame's quarterback, is the best quarterback in the country. So the reason I wanted to bring you on is kind of that synergy of, you know, Lou Holtz, last coach to lead Notre Dame to a national title. And now Notre Dame, if you look at FanDuel, co-favorites with Indiana, Texas, and Ohio State, or actually DraftKings that. FanDuel, they're the outright favorite, plus 650, and Circa is 8-1. Pete, is this the most expectations a Notre Dame team has had since .. 2006, or is this even surpass Weiss's second year?
I think, yeah, it's, to me, it surpasses Weiss's second year, which was, those were really high expectations. Because I think in the big reason is probably like Notre Dame is way more used to winning now than they were back then. The expectation was like, well, you were just in the national title game 2 years ago. The 06 team was, they lost to Michigan State obviously an incredible game against USC. Ohio State, I thought, was significantly better than Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl that year, but it was still a good game. I mean, this year's team, like I said, 2 years away from the national title. Last year was a team that could have won it. All that rolled into one. Like, this is the most hyped Notre Dame team that I probably will have ever covered. And I think that even, look, Marcus Freeman, that he's part of it too. CJ Carr is a huge part of that. I don't think I'm reaching here because, like, college football is in a very emotional sport.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the passing of Lou Holtz is more for that. They will have undoubtedly, Lou stickers on the helmet or, the bar across the top, which they had with Era about 10 years ago. I think the emotional tidal wave of everything around Notre Dame right now, I mean, including being excluded from the playoff and how that happened last year, like, it's set up, man. Like, if college football decided it's national champion by narrative, Notre Dame would be a runaway favorite right now. Obviously, it doesn't work that way, but I do think there's something to be said for that.
I was doing a radio hit with my buddy in D.C. earlier on Thursday, and he asked me about, my favorite memories of the Holtz era. And I'm like, well, I mean, I was pretty young. I was one or two when they won the national title. Obviously, Tim Brown wins the Heisman Trophy. But the thing I brought up, Pete, and I'm curious your perspective on it. The Holtz era at the peak, right, 88 to 93, when they were a fixture in the top 10, they were pumping out pro talent, not only on the defensive and offensive lines, which they've done for a long time, but also at skill position players as well. Is this the most talented Notre Dame has been since the Holtz era?
I think that's a tougher question. But the answer is probably yes.
I just mean as a program, Pete.
Yeah,
not necessarily, it's like, one particular team, but like the program, the inflection of talent. Because, like, Jeremiah Love's going to be a top 10 pick. Jadarian Price, first or second round pick. Malachi Fields, second or third round pick. Like, those are skill position players. You've seen the Kyle Hamiltons. You've seen the, the Quentin Nelsons, et cetera. But I feel like from a skill position talent, and then to see, CJ Carr listed in some rankings, not all, but some rankings, as the best quarterback in the country, it does feel like from a talent standpoint, Notre Dame is at a level they haven't been from a sustained standpoint for a while.
Yeah, I think so. I think this is probably the most talented team that I will have covered too. I'm always kind of like hesitant to get into like, this is the most since whatever, because all right, how do we account for losing Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price? Like, you don't just like, well, we have Aeneas Williams now. Like, that's right. Not the same thing.
Yeah.
But how do you account for CJ Carr being a returning starter? Like, that's tough too. So I'm cautious to say, like, this is the most talented team I've covered, like, I'm very, very open to that idea. You even go back to like, okay, I get it. They played for the title in 2012. They were in the 4-team CFP in 18 and 20. They played for the title in 2024. So like all those teams obviously were very talented. I think this team would probably beat all of them. Some of that talent question is like, we had some interviews this week where they brought in the freshman who enrolled in January. So you're watching Joey O'Brien, Kari Adams, Aiden Pouncey walk up the stairs. These are a front. O'Brien's a safety. Adams and Pouncey are corners. And you're just like, holy crap. Like, this is what peak Alabama and Georgia's secondary probably look like walking up the stairs as freshmen. Are they going to have a huge impact this year? I don't know. Probably not. But they're probably not going to have a huge impact because of Tay Johnson and Adon Chuler and Leonard Moore and Christian Gray. So it's like, I think even the talent that's on the bench this year is just going to be off, like, of a different cut than what I'm used to covering around here.
So I guess right now, you know, we're in the thick of it. NFL draft, combine going on. Jeremiah Love puts on a show. People, you know, I've said this a couple times, haven't said it on this podcast, but I think Jeremiah Love, in my opinion, is going to be the story of the draft. And here's why. There's no quarterback intrigue. Mendoza's going one. Ty Simpson maybe ended the first round. It's like, all right, who's the next sizzle person? Oh, there's Jeremiah Love. He went to Notre Dame. He jumps over people. So the question for a college football podcast, and you just kind of hinted at it, okay, CJ Carr's coming back. Leonard Moore is a consensus All-American cornerback, good defense, but you are losing maybe the best running back in the school's history, most talented one, in Jeremiah Love. And, oh, by the way, the backup might be a first-round pick as well. How much does CJ Carr miss having a safety blanket of two NFL running backs?
I think it will be massive. And I think the way secondaries and, like, let's just say the way back sevens had to defend CJ Carr last year was like, I equated Jeremiah Love being on the field as a play action fake, whether you faked it to him or not. It didn't, like, you had to, like, okay, shit, he might get the ball. Like, that was just how impactful he was on the game. Aeneas Williams is just not going to do that because there aren't running backs like that. So teams will defend Carr a lot differently. I think he's going to see some drop eight type stuff. Think about the way USC played Notre Dame last year with two high safeties all the time, which was like basically a suicide pact. That actually would make sense as strategy this year against Notre Dame. And so and think of the way CJ Carr played in that game. So it's, yeah. I think CJ Carr is going to have some new challenges this season that he hasn't faced before, some different kind of hurdles to clear. I think he will do it, but I just think CJ Carr is going to see a completely, what he sees when he looks out beyond the line of scrimmage is going to be totally different than what he saw last year because number 4 and number 24 are not standing 3 yards away from him.
Is he ready for it? What does this wide receiver room look like too? Because look, not that Malachi Fields was a household name, but he's a guy that, you know, some mocks have him in the first. I don't think he'll go in the first, but regardless, he'll be a second day NFL draft pick and he's gone. What does this offense look like with CJ Carr now with this pressure on his shoulders, right? You're Bill Conley, I think Tom Fornelli, CBS, a couple of these like credible college football people think he's the best returning quarterback in college football.
I think he's ready for it. It will be interesting to sort of see Notre Dame's offense be built around the pass game instead of the run game. Like, I mean, think about the games where, I think it was maybe Pittsburgh, certainly Stanford at the end. You're just like, yeah, could you just throw it 8 times? Like, we don't need you to do a whole lot today. Yeah. Like, he's going to have to win games, most of them, maybe all of them. When Miami comes to town, CJ Carr's going to have to win that game. When they go to BYU, CJ Carr is going to have to win that game. When they're in the playoff next year, CJ Carr is going to have to win those games. And he didn't last year. Not saying he couldn't have. I mean, he almost beat A&M. I thought he was good enough to beat Miami. But against USC, when he really struggled, it didn't matter. Just give the ball to Jeremiah Love. He'll run for 292 yards or something. That's a different kind of challenge. I think he is 100% ready for it. He knows it's coming. Welcomes it coming. But this is going to be a season where, you know, 30 pass attempts is going to be more of the regular. I think it's going to be a really fun offense to watch. And I think that Carr will be good enough. And the receivers, are they amazing? I think it'll be more than good enough to like beat people. I've heard really good things about Mylon Graham coming in from Ohio State. So if it's Jordan Faison, Mylon Graham, Jaden Greathouse, can you get something out of either Quincy Porter or some of the younger receivers? You know, if that happens, then CJ Carr will not be short of options. It's just teams are not going to be able to put 7 in the box because they have to next year. They're going to have to scheme some stuff open.
How would you say from a wide receiver, a pass catching, I'll include tight ends, how would you say they've been recruiting over the last 3 years? Because you mentioned, hey, you could have someone emerge, right? You know, people might not remember this, but Kyren Williams was not a household name, and then he became one in, 2020 or whatever that was. So who are some of the pass catchers that could become familiar as the year goes on?
Well, I think, you know, for Notre Dame fans are aware of Jaden Greathouse. I don't know why anyone nationally would be aware of him other than Penn State, Ohio State from 2 years ago. I think he's has a chance to be very good. I think Mylon Graham will be very good. I like Cooper Flanagan a lot. He's now more than a year removed from the Achilles tear he suffered against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. Really wiped out his entire season last year. So I think he's like a classic Notre Dame tight end. He's not Rudolph Eifert. He's maybe more like Fasano type, if that makes sense. Like more like a classic throwback tight end. But it's just going to be a real pain in the butt at the line of scrimmage. So I think he will be somebody that has a good season. And I like James Flanagan, no relation, who was a freshman last year, played a little. Staff's very high in him, and undoubtedly they will have some young player emerge. You know, maybe it'll be Ian Premmer, who's a five-star tight end they got, who's coming in this summer. So there will be some surprise story there. But I just look at the volume of options. I mean, you're a Notre Dame fan. You remember the team from 3 years ago when they went to Duke and they had three healthy receivers.
Yeah,
like they have 14 or 15 receivers right now, and they'll have, I think, five tight ends. Like, it's they have an absolute stud at those positions? No. There's no Will Fuller or Michael Mayer, but man, they've got some options, and somebody, like, they have some options that are proving themselves, and I think there will be guys that come on too, that take advantage of what will be an incredible competition at both those spots.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, why Notre Dame will win the title, why they won't win the title, and how good is that defense?
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. Pete Sampson from The Athletic. Make sure you read all his work. He's got a really good piece out there about the life and legacy of Lou Holtz. I have a funny video up on Twitter right now. Jerome Bettis told us a story about Lou Holtz when he was, I think, heading into his sophomore season. He was on the cover of, I want to say, Blue and Gold Illustrated. I know your former colleague, Tim Priester.
Yes.
He's told me that he was the one who spritzed him up, Sultan of Six. So go check that out. But so many great stories of Lou Holtz. Real quickly, before we get back into Notre Dame and betting-wise and all of that, do you have a story that comes to mind from Lou, whether one you heard or an interaction that you had over the years you've covered the team?
So I really have only had one interaction with him. I don't know. It's certainly like not even the top 100 Lou Holtz stories. And I would say if you're looking for Lou Holtz stories, Stanford Steve tweeted out a segment that Reese Davis came on this SVP show talking about Augusta National. I'm not going to ruin it for anybody, but go watch that. But yeah, my only interaction with Holtz was he came back and I think it was early Brian Kelly. And I was like, well, I'm going to do this interesting question here where I get him to open up about his coaching philosophies and like how it would adapt to the modern age where, you know, you hear about more player-led programs and, you know, the players taking the lead in the locker room. And so I asked Lou Holtz about, you know, how, you know, did he sort of espouse like the idea that best programs are player-led? And he was like, what the hell are you talking about? Like Lou Holtz ran the show. Their players did not need to lead anything with Lou Holtz because Lou Holtz was leading everything. And, you know, it's like in 2026, does that work with NIL and the portal? I don't know, but man, he killed it with that sort of vibe of leadership in the 80s and 90s. But I just remember it's coming out like, yeah, I didn't really get the answer I was looking for on that one.
Yeah. So make sure you check out Pete. I know Irish Illustrated, part of the I think it's 247 family. Yep. Make sure you check out all of their content. There's great stories, as you alluded to. I was watching Reese Davis last night on SVP Center. It was a great story that he told. So, yeah, the outpouring of great stories are certainly out there when it comes to Lou Holtz. Well, can Notre Dame win their first title since Lou Holtz? 1988, last time Notre Dame won a national championship. Obviously, many fans like myself in 1993, especially with how this year unfolded, makes us bring back those memories with Notre Dame beating Florida State. But I digress. Before we get into will they or can they and why won't they, this defense, I mentioned it with Leonard Hamilton. You could argue he's the best defensive back in college football coming back. You know, I know Mekhi Lemon spoke highly of him at the NFL Combine. I think Jeremiah Smith did so last year at Big Ten Media Days. How good is this defense? And, you know, CJ Carr's going to get a lot of love, but if they win the national title, is it because of this defense?
Yeah, it's I loved how you just combined Leonard Moore and Kyle Hamilton into Leonard Hamilton, by the way. Yeah, you made him sound like neither of them sound athletic
basketball
at all
on the brain.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it will be the best secondary I have ever covered at Notre Dame. The defensive ends with Bryce Young and Boubacar Traore, you know, with Keon Keeley coming off the bench. You know, Rodney Dunham is a freshman I've heard really good things about already. And like what they did in the portal at defensive tackle, because let's go back 2 months when the portal opened. It was like panic, all hands on deck, you know, fire, you know, torches and pitchforks on message boards. And then they go out and get two really good defensive tackles, including Francis Brew from Pittsburgh, who I think is better than really good. To like knit the entire secondary together, they revamped the staff. Say what you want about Chris Ash, what they did with Aaron Henry and Charlie Partridge coming in to get two guys that know Ash and sort of are fluent in his playbook. I think you're eliminating the hiccups that you saw early last season that way. So I think this has got a number one defense in the country vibe to it. The schedule's not great. Mm-hmm. So I think they're going to make some people look pretty miserable along the way. And then, you know, we'll find out how good they really are against Miami and BYU. But this defense is like you're giving up 12, 13 points a game, maybe. It wouldn't surprise me if they had by the. They don't play a team that finished last season with a winning record until BYU on, I think, October 17th. It wouldn't surprise me if in their first six games, if they allowed six touchdowns or less.
Yeah, it's going to be quite the interesting decision by odds makers what this win total is going to be for Notre Dame. If it's 10.5, it's going to be heavily, heavily, heavily juiced to the over. Do you make it 11.5 and them to go undefeated? It's going to be fascinating to see what they ultimately do. All right, Pete, I'll let you run on this. Notre Dame wins the national championship. Why?
I think all those skill player options that I talk about, they have a breakout. There's a breakout in there. There's a sophomore year Will Fuller. There is CJ Procise in 2015, or Kyron Williams in 2019. There's a 2020, where it's just like, whoa, where did this come from? And I think they probably only need one of those. I'm not saying it's, you know, every program's got a question or a couple. I really think Notre Dame just needs one breakout player, like the equivalent of Tay Johnson last year, but on offense at receiver or tight end or running back. If they get one of those, because I think the defense is just going to be phenomenal. I think CJ Carr is going to be lights out. I think the offensive line should be very good. Maybe not great, but very good. Just one breakout player. If that happens, then all right. I'll see you in Vegas, and I'm going to be writing really late and podcasting really late on January 25th, and then we'll go out and have a good time. So if there's a breakout player, I'm going to be a mess on January 26th of next year. Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
On the 26th, the 27th, and the 28th. We'll see.
We'll have to stay a couple extra days.
Yeah, we know some people. We'll make it happen. All right. And they don't win. What's the reason that Notre Dame goes 10-2 in the regular season? I mean, if they go 10-2, Pete, I've said it. I don't think they make the playoff. They didn't make it this year at 10-2. I think this schedule is so weak that if they trip and have a couple stumbling blocks, they're not making the playoff at 10-2. What's the doomsday, outside of like catastrophic injuries, what's the doomsday scenario?
Yeah, I mean, you can't lose Carr at any point.
Sure. Depth there, right?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, it's the inverse of what I just said, that they don't have anybody. Right. You know, it's like, you think about Jaden Greathouse's season last year, like if that happens to Faison or Aeneas Williams, or there's just like people regress, you know, Tay Johnson, like if he takes a huge step backwards or something. I will say they miss a clutch field goal is, you know, to get a little micro on you. Yeah. Like I do think the kicking game is an issue until otherwise proven based on the way they went last year. Should it be better? Yes. They brought in multiple kickers, you know, but Spencer Porath is at least tested in a way that, like, you know, but, you know, Noah Burnett's injury was ended up being catastrophic to last season in some regards. So, yeah, it's like the kicking game, or they just don't develop at wide receiver the way that I thought that they would, because they're going to have to win pass first, run second, I think, this season in a way that the last couple years were run first and second, pass third. They're going to need the receivers really to develop.
Notre Dame opens the season Lambeau Field. I'm sure I'll find a way to talk about them between March 5th and the start of the season. I'm just guessing. I might be able to find out. But Pete, I look forward to those celebratory beers in Vegas in January of 27. But always appreciate it, man. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Anytime, Tim.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, wrapping things up, it is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Thanks again to Pete Sampson for jumping on and giving us an in-depth preview on Notre Dame. Like I said, I know there might be the collective eye roll out there that we did that with Notre Dame, but I thought with the passing of Lou Holtz and this team being one of the preseason favorites, made some sense. But I will do some in-depth previews of a number of other teams, and if you have any recommendations at cfbpod@vsin.com. Hit us up there. You can hit me up on Twitter as well. As you know, I'm rocking my Rainbow Authentics hat if you're watching with us on YouTube. And just a reminder, they've got great new gear over at Rainbow Authentics. If you want to help out Hawaii Athletics, and we're counting down the days to week zero, they've got the Ode to Aloha Stadium, the Rust Palace, a t-shirt that is out there. The Big Fish, Isaac Johnson, one of the Big West college hoop best players. They've got some gear there for him. Men's volleyball trading cards, the hat that I'm wearing. So plenty of gear over there. RainbowAuthentics.com. And I believe my guy Mike is coming into town next week for the Big West tournament, and maybe we'll get some more gear that we can ship out to you guys. But check them out, rainbowauthentics.com, a proud sponsor of this podcast, and much appreciated to Mike and his team for being a part of this podcast for another year. All right, I wanted to close with this. As I mentioned, Ari Wasserman is scheduled to be on with us next week, and there's a lot of stuff. Ari and Andy, if you're into college football, they're always pumping out content, so make sure you check out their podcast and all of the content they've got over at On3. But, you know, they put out their juiciest games of 2026, and just to kind of, once again, get the juices flowing, if you will. I disagree with some of them. I understand why they did that, make it maybe a little bit different. But number one, I actually thought was a pretty good one, and that's LSU at Ole Miss. And you think about the reception that Lane Kiffin is going to receive returning to Oxford early September. That is going to be just a phenomenal college football atmosphere. It's going to remind me, for those college basketball fans, of when Chris Beard returned to Texas Tech after leaving Texas Tech to go to Texas a couple years ago. They have a couple other games that, once again, you know, Florida and Auburn at number five. Maybe I'm missing something. I don't really think Florida-Auburn is necessarily the fifth most juicy game of the college football season. But I did want to point something out here. And there is a day that is starting to emerge as the day to make sure you don't go anywhere in college football. And I just want to keep it on your radar. It's going to be November 7th. It is week 10 of the college football season. And this day is gearing up to be one of the elite days of the college football season. So if you have family members who are thinking of getting married, tell them not November 7th, because here is what we have on that particular day. We've got Miami Notre Dame. We just talked to Pete Sampson. Maybe the most infamous game of Lou Holtz's entire career was the Holy War, not the Holy War, Catholics versus convicts in October of 1988. Well, we get that November 7th. You add in the fact that Miami gets the final playoff berth over Notre Dame a year ago, going to be in South Bend. That game is going to be incredible. What about Alabama and LSU? Now, Alabama, maybe they take a little bit of a step back this year, but still, Alabama and LSU, that is on November 7th. Alabama, LSU, under the lights in Death Valley, is always, year after year, one of the best games and atmospheres. How about the Holy War? I mentioned that. You've got BYU and Utah on that day. You've got Georgia visiting Ole Miss on that particular Saturday. Georgia and Ole Miss, two teams that were in the playoff a year ago. That should be a spectacular atmosphere. Oh, by the way, on that particular November 7th, we've also got Indiana taking on Ohio State. So you've got that's a little bit earlier in the year. Sorry, you have Oregon and Ohio State. I beg your pardon. So you've got Oregon taking on Ohio State. So just clear your calendar now. November 7th is going to be a day that you're going to want to make sure you've got the entire calendar cleared and you are ready to go for that particular day. Because, man, you think about the quarterbacks that we were talking about in the open, and now some of the games that we have in 2026. And, you know, Indiana, you look at their schedule, and last year, all right, clearly they quieted all concerns that were out there for Indiana. Hey, is this team really that good? I do wish that Drew Mestemaker and Eric Morris didn't move on. I knew that was ultimately going to happen, but Indiana's non-conference to start with North Texas actually would have been pretty fun if that was a loaded North Texas team. But regardless, you look at this Indiana team, they've got a stretch where it's home to Ohio State on October 17th, at Michigan on October 24th, and then USC comes to Bloomington on November 14th. So Indiana's schedule this year, certainly from a conference standpoint, is much more challenging on paper when you look at the defending national champs heading into 2026. But the expectation is there's not going to be much of a drop-off. And why would you doubt anything that Kirk Cignetti has touched over the years, because everything he touches seems to turn to gold. So, man, I'm looking forward to just continuing to dive into all of this. I know we've got March Madness right around the corner, so that will certainly keep many of us very busy when it comes to handicapping. But we're going to be in the thick of it before we know it, breaking this thing down and diving into best bets. And you're going to see sports books across the country coming out with different lines across every which way. FanDuel, by the way, does have some game of the year lines out right now. And some of those games that we alluded to, not too many that far down, but a couple of week one games, a couple of week zero games are up there on FanDuel. If you're jonesing for some action, we do have that out there. Sneaky game week one, UCLA-Cal, kind of a fun one when you've got JKS back with Cal, and you've got UCLA bringing back Nico and bringing in Bob Chesney from James Madison. I think UCLA, we talked about them briefly with Brad Powers. They could be a team that we look at and say, it's UCLA team. Much better than we anticipated in the influx of talent that is out there. So once again, hit us up on email, cfbpod@vsin.com. If you want to hear from any particular guests, do continue to give us those 5-star ratings. It is massive for us as we continue to build this podcast. Check us out on YouTube. Check us out on iTunes and Spotify as well. Thanks to Wyatt, my producer. I'm Tim Murray. This has been the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.